Can you repeat the question?
Is there not much of an effect on resistance?
Under exercise 3, it says, the diagram below shows a volume of large veins approaching the steady pressure where the smooth muscle is relaxed, unstimulated, or contracted, stimulated. Those are mechanisms that would increase Y and increase in vena motor neural effects of client without significant mechanism involved. Muscle tone in the arterioles. that's kind of making the wall stiffer.
Breathing, why is it like breathing?
negative, what has to happen to the intrapleural pressure? Or the intrathoracic pressure in general? It has to become
positive.
More negative. And what does negative mean in this context?
Decreases.
No, I mean, if I say that the intrapleural pressure is negative, what does that mean to you?
Less
than
normally
as
the pressure in the
surrounding area. Well, actually, it's less than the reference pressure. And the reference pressure is atmospheric pressure.
Yeah.
So the reference pressure is zero. And if the intrathoracic pressure is a couple millimeters of mercury less than atmospheric pressure, we say it's negative. So now, what do you think the pressure is in the abdomen?
What, increases.
Okay, so she says it's positive.
Where's the diagram?
Well, if it's positive in the abdomen and it's negative in the thorax, what do we have between the abdomen and the thorax?
Diaphragm.
Pressure gradient.
Oh, yeah.
So if you have that part, that thorax is helping a lot. We have some other issues there, too. So what happens? What happens if your... you're sitting on the toilet.
You're not supposed to push.
And having a hard time.
You're not. You get a hernia if you push.
Push down.
It's not good. That's really bad.
It's going
to break them. Burst a blood vessel in your That's how you get a heart attack.
What do you think? What might happen?
Fiber.
If you really do that,
hernia.
Yeah.
Especially in women. Because you get the wider hips. You have wider hips, so you push part of your intestine. Pressure's got to go somewhere. Yep. The little femoral ring. It pushes it out there, and then you get like this much intestine. Yeah, so don't push.
I know what you're more familiar
with. Or push it back.
How many of you fly high performance aircraft?
What?
What is that?
You know, high performance aircraft?
Personally fly?
You know, airplanes, you know, like jet fighters?
Like, I fly in them.
Go like in them.
Yeah, I wouldn't be here.
It's probably
I'd
more
be flying
straight
planes.
Cool. What do you think happens now? If I close my quads, I push down with my muscles, my thoracic muscles, and actually my abdominal muscles too. What happens to the intrathoracic pressure?
It goes really far up.
It increases.
Until you
what
pop
happens
something.
To blood flow on the venous side toward the heart?
It slows down.
It slows down. If that slows down, what happens to right atrial pressure? Decreases, and what happens to ventricular pressure?
Decreases.
What happens to preload?
Decreases.
Preload decreases, what happens to stroke volume?
Decreases.
If stroke volume decreases, what happens to cardiac output?
Decreases.
What happens if blood flow to the brain if cardiac output decreases?
Decreases.
Then what happens?
Aneurysm.
You get dizzy. Then what happens?
Then pass out.
You pass out.
Aneurysm.
You relax those muscles.
And you wake back up with
muscles.
Your pants around your ankles and sitting on the floor of the bathroom.
Poor Elvis.
Normal pressure. The reason I ask about high performance
in the toilet
is that
he's still alive.
Because a person who flies a high performance aircraft and in the old days, they were trained to do what was called an M1 maneuver. And that's a modified Valsalva maneuver. So they end up contracting their muscles, their legs, holding their breath and pushing down. And by doing that, they're then, by both of those things that they're doing, and is opposing to some extent the pull of gravity on their blood so it doesn't pull them out of part of their body. In about the early 50s, they not only had pilots do that, but they also designed G-suits.
Yep.
So these are bladders that go around the abdomen, go around the legs, and they're hooked up to a valve, and then as you increase the G-force, they inflate. So they basically are big tourniquets that turn off flow to the legs, so you keep all that blood flow central.
Like plastic.
This is a cover when you're flying.
Well, there are two options, you see. One option is to pass out and stay alive, and the other option is to pass out
and kill everyone
and crash at the time relatively cheap, only multi $1 million aircraft in the mountains and grounds and houses and kill people and things like that.
I think I
missed
something else, sorry.
Mr.
Suit pushes on the vasculature down here. You're increasing the force of gravity, maybe up to 9 times normal. Okay? So you have all this force pulling that blood away from the thorax, away from the head. And if I stop that flow into the legs for a short period of time, then I can keep the blood central and have blood going through.
What about the...
I just had a back question. Why do you increase pressure here? Does it decrease pressure? Next pressure?
Why if I increase pressure where?
In here, when you're squeezing.
Why does it... Yeah.
You said it made another pressure decrease. That was the first one you said.
Yeah, if I increase thoracic pressure, then I've decreased the gradient from the abdomen to the thorax. If I decrease the gradient from the abdomen to the thorax, because I'm putting a more positive pressure here than here, I've caused the downstream pressure to increase. And as a result of that, I don't get as much flow. If I don't get as much flow, I don't get as much venous return. If I don't get as much venous return, my atrial pressure goes down. So I don't have much flow going on. We'll talk about that one.
It means that he can create enough
force in his legs, in his abdomen, to stop that cooling much. But I doubt that he puts 12 G's for very long with it.
Yeah.
The story I will tell you is that we used to, okay, this goes back to my science class. We used to actually study blood flow of the lungs and gas exchange and pulmonary mechanics under high gravitational stress. We used to use the human centrifuge that the Nurse Case Medicine
said. That would be fun.
And they do medical evals there and apply it. Take these pilots who are having problems and put them in the centrifuge and spin them around. And this well trained group of guys, because they have cameras on the person in the capsule, and if he faints, by the time that his head, his chin hits his chin and chest, in that short period of time, they stop the centrifuge, they open the door, and they're already in. So I was there one day, and they're spinning this guy from one Scandinavian country center. And sure enough, they take him up to about 6 G's. And they don't do this for very long. They take him up to about 6 G's and start to pass out. They stop him, and he wakes up, and he says, "Geez, that's exactly what it felt like in the aircraft."
You know what? Do you think, my God?
What's the most roller coaster ever? Like, I think you were to go to amusement.
Yeah.
4 or 5.
How many G's would that be?
Probably 2. Two or three.
The good ones are 3.5.
Pardon?
The good ones are 3.5.
3.5.
With the computer generated ones.
Okay, we need to move on. Yeah.
I do know that.
I went on the first computer generated.
I guess
I'm trying to relate it to something that happened as a freshman with mask pants. Do you know what those are? The, the pressure pants for people going into hypovolemic shock. They use in the military, now they use in the emergency medical.
Well, that's a different issue.
Okay, so can you explain that issue?
Yeah, that issue, with that issue, the design of that issue is to is either to stop flow going to extremities or to help them back up.
Yes, it's because so not necessarily bleed out the leg.
No, but in that case, what you're doing is augmenting the cardiovascular system to return blood to the core or to the. To
How's
the
that different?
This is not. This is designed as a large pressure to counteract the flow this way to really stop the flow going down. It's a little bit different. But a little bit different pressure.
So if the oxygen.
Because they're not pushing with their thoracic muscles. They're pushing it down. And they're not doing that with a closed glottis. When you close the glottis, what you're doing is trapping the gas in the lungs in the lung. And they're breathing. Right?
You're supposed to be breathing.
Well, I just wasn't sure because of the one-way valves. How is it able to go? You know, why are we worried about that if the blood can't travel backwards in veins?
Well, if the valves are working okay, they're flimsy as well.
Okay, so
depending on
if
there's enough pressure, they can.
Muscles contract, people complex, and blood is completely.
Yeah, so here's another experience that none of you had. Sure. Anybody ever been in the military? Anybody spend a lot of time in the military?
The yacht.
The yacht? Standing at attention for a long period of time? In the heat?
Yeah.
What happens? Kind of blacked out. But the guy next to you blacked out because he kept tensing his muscles, right? So if you relax, if you lock your knees and you don't periodically squeeze with your muscles, what happens is, in fact, you have a lot of pulling down here. Base return decreases, and cardiac output decreases. Blood flow to the brain decreases. You pass out.
So this question doesn't mean upon standing in the act. Standing in place
for a while, right.
Anytime your muscles aren't being used.
So we'll talk about what happens when you stand up in a little while, because we have to think about what the system is going to do because of that cooling. Yep. No, don't worry about the swelling. We'll do that later today. We're going to swell later today. Okay, anything else about this? So, the next question that we might deal with is, we talked about this pressure reservoir, right? And when we did our Seymour Fish exercise, we thought maybe we better have some sensors in here to measure the pressure, to make some changes that might keep the mean arterial pressure fairly constant, the average pressure measured fairly constant. So, If you were gonna look for pressure sensors in this system, where would you put them? Where do you think I would put pressure sensors? I'd put them here. Where would I put them? The job then is to measure. Where would you want to measure if you were designing the system?
In
the aorta. Why would you want to measure it in the aorta? Because the aorta is important.
Okay.
That's where your maximum pressure is. Okay. Sensors measure flow then? But you said how much blood gets there.
Well, it's not going to be measuring pressure, but pressure is a function of flow for volume rather than find the blood that gets there.
But if I maintain the pressure here, if I measure the pressure there, So if we have the guy with the coarctation in the aorta, where there is a, let's say there's a narrowing right here, then you want to know that this pressure is low, well, because then you can do something consistently. Yes? That's what you do. And let's say you talk about that guy with the coarctation in the aorta. Remember him? What could the system do to increase the pressure down here?
So, establish blood
there, there's a narrow. Can't die like that because that's a congenital problem.
Okay, so you can increase the pressure with cardiac output.
So you'd increase this pressure. That's already increased. The point is, if in fact I want a sample, if you're talking, how many sensors would I have to have?
A lot.
How many sensors would I have to have if I take the suggestion that we measure at the aorta?
One. What
if that one goes?
That's true.
So if you lose that one and you're done, which bed are you most concerned with? Which master bed in this body do you think you're most concerned with? Blood going to the head. So do you think you might put a sensor somewhere up here in case that one goes? So if we look at and what kind of sensor would that be? What would you call that sensor?
Pressure sensor.
A baroreceptor.
Baro.
And so what you find here is in the arch of the aorta, there are some pressure receptors, baroreceptors, and in the carotid sinus, there are some baroreceptors.
These receptors that respond to stretch.
So what do you think, how do you think they might work? They're in the wall, and they're in the wall of the aortic arch, and in the wall of the carotid sinus, how do you think they would work?
There's increased pressure in the arterial walls of the aortic arch.
Well, it's not a matter of compliance or not compliance. If I put more pressure in there, what's that going to do to the wall? It's going to stretch it out. So now, if you have a receptor in there that responds to that, what do you think that stretching would do to the receptor?
Activate it.
What does that mean? Make
something activate. It would have a confidence.
Could release some sort of neurotransmitter to relay those signals back to.
So I have here. I have nerve is going up to the medulla here. Going up to the medulla and sensing some stretch right here. How does that signal get from here up to the roof?
Action.
If I look very closely at the receptor, what do I expect to find in the membrane of the axon? So,
pressure-gated sodium channels.
That's pressure-gated.
No. Stretch.
So what do you think? How
mechanically gated?
How could I stretch activate
mechanical.
A sodium channel?
Stretch over here. That's pressure. It's just pulling.
Mechanical. I say, how could this happen? And I hear calcium concentration. What do you think might happen?
As they stretch,
together.
No.
You were going like that.
He just goes, you know what? I can't even, I don't even know how to respond to this.
If I'm looking at that cell membrane, could a physical deformation of that cell membrane cause a channel?
Maybe.
And boy, that sounds really neat.
I like it. He's gonna use the word swell, but he thought you guys were confused.
What's at the beginning of the axon? Voltage gate. Magnetization gates. Okay. And so we start that axon, that action potential that then gets propagated up.
Cool.
Very good. Okay. So in that case, if the blood pressure increased, would you expect to find more action potential or less action? All right, that's good. Okay. So let's build ourselves a system.
Are all signals excitatory?
you, how would you cause the heart rate to decrease? You do what? See, the parasympathetic, you could either increase parasympathetic activity of the heart or decrease sympathetic activity of the heart. Because when we looked at the pacemaker cells, we found that acetylcholine caused those cells, when they're repolarized after the action potential, to repolarize farther than the control, which means that the spontaneous depolarization threshold took a longer period of time. We also saw that normally, there's some sympathetic and parasympathetic input to the heart. So increasing the parasympathetic outflow to the heart will end up causing an increase in heart rate. So, okay, one of the things you can do is decrease heart rate. Savant said, I could decrease venomotor tone. If I decrease venomotor tone, what effect would that have? I'd have less blood return to the heart. What effect would that have? And why would it increase cardiac output?
Less preload.
Tell me the next.
Preload.
Less preload.
Less contraction, less stroke volume.
Okay, and so what you just said was I could. It would end up with a decreased preload, which would cause a decreased force of contraction, cause a decreased stroke volume. Okay, so now you said that the effectors I could have in here would be a decrease in heart rate, a decrease in venomotor tone, decreased. And the other thing that Kelly started telling us, and it was picked up by floor over here is saying that if I decrease the degree of constriction in the arterioles, then there's going to be less resistance out this way, and this blood is going to flow out easier. So I'm going to decrease clipping.
Why you can't decrease resistance from the arteries as well as the arterioles?
Because the arc, because if we look back, at this picture, we found that there wasn't very much of a resistance to the artery because of the size of their tubes. The major resistance to flow of the arterial system was at the arteriole. So now we need to define a term here. We talked about flow from the aorta to the right ventricle. And we talked about the systemic circulation. That's what we're on here. And we said that this high resistance stenosis here is the arteriole. So if I look at this picture, major resistance to flow from the aorta to the right atrium through the systemic vasculature, and if I assume that the pulmonary circuit is very small compared to the rest, I could say that the total resistance, the total peripheral resistance, all of the resistance to flow from, or major resistance to flow from the atrium, from the aorta to the right atrium, exists in the arterioles. So we're going to call that, in some books, total peripheral resistance. If you look in other books, more recent books, they changed the name of that. It's no longer total peripheral resistance. It's systemic vascular resistance. It's separated from pulmonary vascular resistance. But what that tells us is it's the overall state of the arterial. And that's the convention we're going to adopt. So that's really neat. So what you guys did now, is what you said was, is that
sympathetic are the ones from control, right?
So
bad and not make it.
Just like, you know, like your heart, well, part you, mostly your
heart
lungs and heart.
Contractility or sympathetic.
Because you can control it. So it's more like, so you want to think of something like.
Motor tone and vasomotor tone.
Yeah, and like, you know, all your organ stuff that you can't control. So things
I
that
mean,
you can.
Just in this list.
Yeah.
He said three of them were sympathetic and one wasn't. So which is the one that's not sympathetic? I'll ask.
Well, we can control heart rate and
contractility.
Yeah. So I think anything that you can kind of control, like mentally, I don't know, but they're going to be one of these.
Yeah.
Great note. This is...
We'll find out.
I don't know.
Thank you.
And if I look at any control system, there are three possibilities. If I make a disturbance and I increase the signal above the reference, this can come back down and be critically damped, which means that it's going to come right to that level. It can be underdamped, which means it's going to oscillate back and forth like that and finally approach that level. Or it can be overdamped, which means it's going to come back down and take a really, really long time to approach the reference level but never get there. I prefer to look at that more not in terms of an increase in pressure but a decrease in pressure. So if that's the reference value, what you see is if I perturb the system, this will come back. Tend to approach that, but then quite easy. That's one of the characteristics that you can assume of essentially all normally functioning control systems. It's under damped.
If in fact you measure,
talking about change.
You measure the frequency of action tensions from this nerve. You go see that as the pressure increases, you would expect what to happen? More action tensions. And as the pressure, this is another question. As the pressure increases, what would you expect to happen? You just told me that if I increase the blood pressure, I said, what would happen to our action test? Kelly said it would increase. And I said, well, here's another question. If I increase the blood pressure, what do you expect would happen?
Increase.
It would be more of an increase.
It was, though.
I just thought you'd see what would happen. So if I plot, this is really important to recognize because, you see, what some folks seem to think is that there's something in this system that says, oh, the blood pressure is going to have changed things. And if you listen to what they say, they seem to think that if the blood pressure decreases, the number of signals increases. If the blood pressure increases, the number of signals increases. There's no way for the brain to make any determination in that model of what's happening. So if we plot frequency of action, frequency of action tensions here. We measure those, and we're going to measure pressure. We're going to change the pressure here. And what we see what you just told me is that I get a curve like that. In fact, what the system does is like that. The system does like this. So right here is a mean pressure of about 100. So it's very sensitive around that area. So is it just measuring mean pressure, or is it measuring systolic and diastolic pressure? Well, there's some response to systolic and diastolic pressure, but in the general terms that we're talking about, it's a short-term regulation of mean arterial pressure. That the rate of entry depends on the heart rate, depends on the stroke volume. The stroke volume depends on contractility and preload. Preload depends on, to some extent, on the motor tone. So I can change those four things to change the arterial pressure. And so if the blood pressure decreases in there, how is the system going to respond? If the blood pressure decreases, how will the system respond?
So increase the resistance?
It will increase the resistance. How will it increase the stroke volume? By increasing contractility. What'd you say?
Preload.
How would it increase the preload?
By constricting the venous walls.
Okay. By constricting, she says, the venous walls. Let's talk about that word for a minute. There's a tube.
Harder.
Okay. Well, in this case, we're talking about a vein.
Then you should use blue.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry.
Good one. Keep them honest.
In a closer time, in your discussion, could you just this whole back corner has Seymour Fish model, what we have is our volume reservoir in the large veins, and by changing the tone of the walls, we can either mobilize volume or hold more volume in that container. So we said, okay, one of the things that we want to look at now is maintenance of blood pressure
in our pressure reservoir, which was the arterial reservoir. So we said, we should try to find some baroreceptors. We should try to find something that measures the pressure. And we thought that the place that we might look that seems reasonable to look is either in the aorta, because it's right on the output of the pump, or on the way to the brain, because the brain actually controls everything, and the brain is concerned about the brain. The brain really doesn't care about anything else. So we looked in there, and we found that in the aortic arch, there were some baroreceptors, and in the carotid sinus, there were some baroreceptors. Yep?
I'm really, really sorry to interrupt.
That's okay.
We're trying to block this a little bit.
Well, I'll tell you where this is coming from. It's coming from the movement. Because there's some strange thing. I mean, we thought one day we were sitting there and we thought that they were having a party next week.
Yeah.
They're straight
back. It was a... I don't know if there's a whole lot of
people.
Yeah. There's
chairs
on my ear.
There's heavy chairs over there.
Yeah. You could just move up.
Could just...
Yeah, we're going over there. But I have like directional.
Yeah, I just did. Can
you
get it down a little bit?
Show them the thing. Hey, shut up.
It's like a broom. It's magic.
That and the microphone will help.
Is that better?
Is it on?
Is it? Yeah.
You gotta turn it on.
Oh, I get it. Yeah. Talk louder into the microphone.
Nope. Testing, testing, 1, 2.
So we said...
Much better.
Okay, so we said...
Much better.
We said that we're going to expect to find... some sort of a pressure measuring device. We decided we would look in the aorta and we look in the carotid somewhere up in the brain. We found those two. And then we said, how would we expect these to work? And Chad told us that maybe if we stretch the walls, of those vessels or those receptors, they might hold the physical movement of stretching the membrane. They cause sodium channels to open.
Savant said that.
Yeah. That
wasn't.
That was all you.
So Savant said that. Chad started it. And then we decided that, okay, if that was the case, then as the pressure went up, we would expect there to be more channels open. We would expect there to be more action potential. That gave us the basis of thinking about what we would expect to see if we were measuring the brain information from the baroreceptors. So then we said, okay, let's think about how this system might work then. We went back to our control system model, and we said we have the signal from the sensors. So pressure, blood pressure, mean arterial pressure, is a regulated variable because it's a sensed variable. That's what we're sensing. We expect this signal to go up to the brain. Can you? Oh, you just start. Up to the brain, where it's going to be compared to some signal that we said in our model was a set point. But then when we found out later when Savant asked about it, that it was really an integrated signal coming from a lot of different places that behaves like a set point. And if, in fact, the set point was higher or lower than the signal coming in, there would be an error signal generated. And on the basis of that error signal, the brain would interpret that error signal. We decided the place in the brain that would do that is in the medulla and the cardiovascular center. And would affect four effectors. We would control four effectors. We said it could control the motor tone, it could control heart rate, control cardiac contractility, or control resistance. And we said that it does that. pretty much on the basis of